Question: what are the essence and attributes of God? Can we describe Him? How can we respond to those who ask, why can't we see God? And given that God created everything, who created God? Answer: God is absolutely other than His creation. The Creator cannot by any means be the same kind of being as that which He created. Although this is self-evident to sense and reason, some people still ask why we cannot directly see God. But direct vision is very limited and could never be an appropriate way of seeking the unlimited. Let us explain. There are innumerable bacteria in the human body. Indeed, innumerable bacteria in so small a space as a human tooth. These creatures are quite unaware of the tooth in which they live. To become aware of it, they would have to somehow situate themselves out of the tooth, and then, through the use of artificial means, they might, conceivably, obtain some very approximate notion of the dimension of the tooth, and then, perhaps, of the larger body to which the tooth is attached. Only through such an effort, which is scarcely imaginable, could the bacteria become aware of the human body, which makes up the large ground or sustaining environment of their life. And this is scarcely imaginable awareness is itself an immeasurable distance away from anything remotely resembling what we would call understanding. Though on a very different scale, the sense awareness of human beings is similarly limited. It may indeed be that, with the assistance of telescopes and other instruments, we can see across distances of millions of light years. But all that we see in this way is insignificant compared to the dimensions of the whole of which it is a minute fragment. In fact, allowing for the difference in scale, what human beings can see is as insignificant as the bacteria's awareness of the living tissue within which they exist and perish when compared to the dimensions of the body of which that tissue is a minute fragment. Further, if we consider the matter closely, we soon realize that our seeing is conditional upon our understanding. We need to have some general ideas about what we see in order to distinguish it and recognize it. If we did not have some idea, however vague at first, of what, for example, a tree is, we should be literally unable to make sense of that object before our eyes, which we know as a tree. If our seeing is as limited as it is, and if, even for the objects within creation and within the reach of our seeing or our seeing instruments, we need some general understanding so that we can make sense of what we see, how improper a demand it is, and how absurd a demand to ask why we cannot directly see or directly know the Creator of the whole. We are created beings, that is, finite, limited in our possibilities and our capacities. Only the Creator, God, is infinite. By His mercy, the creation is available to us as the ground or environment within which we exist and perish, strive for understanding and virtue, and seek our salvation. The Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said, "Compared with the seat of honor, the whole universe is as little as a ring thrown upon a desert. Similarly, compared with the throne, the kursi is as little as a ring thrown upon the desert." From that comparison, we gain some understanding of how far the infinitude of the Creator exceeds our power of apprehending it. How can we even begin to conceive of the reality of the kursi and the arsh from which the Almighty in His infinite majesty sends out His will and command and sustains His creation, let alone begin to conceive of God Himself? Question: why can't we see God? Answer: the Quran teaches, "Vision comprehends him not, but he comprehends all vision." After the prophets ascend to the heavens, peace be upon him, his companions asked him if he had seen God. It is reported on the authority of Abu Dar that, on one occasion he answered, "What I saw was the light. How do I see him?" And on another occasion he answered, "I have seen a light." These statements clarify the well-known saying, "The light is the limit or veil of God." Between us and God is the light which he created. All that we see by that light, within that light. The light is the ground and environment and the limit of our seeing, and that light shields or veils us from God. In fact, we see but a part of that light of creation. We see but a part of what veils him. Let us consider the matter from another direction. Ibrahim Haki says, "In the whole universe of creation, there is nothing that is either the like or the equal or the contrary of God. God is exalted above all form, indeed immune to and free from form. It is only because existing things have a like, equal, or a contrary that we are able to distinguish them and perceive them. We know what is long only against what is short by comparison or contrast. Similarly, we know light only against what is dark. How then should we distinguish or perceive one who is neither like, equal, nor contrary? This is the meaning of the statement that God is exalted above form." The reader will certainly have understood that the question of those who ask to directly perceive God is but an image of the question of those who ask to directly think or know his being. But in truth, we can no more think or know his being than we can see him. Just as he is beyond all measure of form or quality or quantity, he is also beyond all our powers of conception or reasoning. As the Muslims learned in theology put it, whatever conception of God we form in our minds, he is other than it. And the Sufis say, God is beyond and beyond all our conceptions, and we are surrounded by thousands of veils. Men of wisdom have said that God exists and he cannot be comprehended by human reason nor perceived by human senses. The only means to knowledge of him is through the prophets, that is, the men whom God appointed as bearers of his revelation. Where perception and reason have no access, we need to, indeed we must, accept the guidance of revelation. Imagine that we are in a closed room and hear a knocking at the door of that room. We may well form some vague impressions about who is knocking, but we can no more than guess at its attributes. We know for certain only that there is knocking at the door, and that we are free to go to the door and, on opening it, ask the person to make himself known to us so that we obtain thereby a more secure knowledge of his true attributes. This poor analogy may help us to more usefully approach the question of how to seek God. The fact of creation, the immensity of it combined with an essential unity of form, the sheer beauty and harmony of it, and its usefulness to us as well as its demands upon our labor and our understanding, all make us aware of the existence of the Creator. In just the same way as we deduce from the manufacturer of a wonderful diversity of fabrics out of a single material, that there is certainly an agent who spins and mixes and dyes and weaves and otherwise prepares the final product, so we deduce from the stunning evidence of the creation that there is a creator. While a manufacturer of fabrics can be got hold of and may be persuaded to make himself known to us, no such impertinent curiosity can be addressed to the Creator. Indeed, it would be most incorrect to do so, as well as being impossible. Just as impossible as it would be for the fabric to address such curiosity to the fabric maker. Thus, without assistance from the Creator himself, we can get no further than when, hearing the first knocking on the door, we begin to indulge hopelessly vague surmises about who was knocking. But the reality is that, by the mercy of God, the creation of mankind was accompanied by revelation. Through God's revelation to the prophets and their teaching, the door is held open for us. We are enabled to respond to the creation around us as signs manifesting not only the fact of the Creator's existence, but also His attributes. Through the prophets, we learn to contemplate His attributes and to call them the One, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate, the All-Knowing, the All-Powerful, and so on. A true understanding of these attributes requires inward experience and contemplation, which are achieved only after sincere and total observance of the divine decrees, objective study, and long, profound meditation, according to the pattern of the prophets. Even then, it is by no means possible for any person to comprehend the divine essence. That is why it is said, His names are known, His attributes are comprehended, and His essence exists. In the words of Abu Bakr As-Sadi, may God be pleased with him, to comprehend His essence means to confess that His essence cannot be comprehended. What falls to us is to remain committed to our covenant with God and to beseech Him in this way. O you who alone are worshipped, it needs no saying that we are unable to attain to true knowledge of you, yet we believe that you are indeed nearer to us than our neck veins. We feel your existence and nearness in the depths of our hearts through the universe which you have created and opened to us like a book, and through the wonderful harmony of form between the least and the largest of what you have brought into being. We come to perceive that we are integrated into the whole realm of your theophanies, and by that perception, our souls are rested and consoled, and our hearts find serenity. But there are some who do not seek any such serenity, or indeed any inward life at all. They are of a mechanical turn of mind, and readily fall into a mechanical kind of sophistry which entraps and paralyzes their reason. They ask, given that God created everything, who created God? When I first heard this question, I straightaway confessed again, and Muhammad is his messenger, for the Prophet, peace be upon him, predicted that this question would be raised. Indeed, he predicted a great many future events of importance. All have come true and will continue to do as time unfolds. On one occasion he said, a day will certainly come when some people will sit with their legs crossed and ask, given that God created everything, who created God? Of course, those who put such questions are atheists or inclined to theism and seek to lead others astray also. The purpose of their question is to avoid the responsibility owed by a creature to the Creator, to avoid belief and worship. At best, the question is derived from the observation of cause and effect relationships. Every circumstance can be thought of as an effect and attributed to an antecedent circumstance or cause, which in turn is attributed to some circumstance antecedent to it, and so on. In the first place, it is obvious to anyone who reasons objectively that the notion of cause is only an hypothesis. It has no objective existence. All that objectively exists is a particular, often, but not always, repeated sequence of circumstances. Secondly, if this hypothesis is applied to existence as a whole, We cannot find a creator of it because each creator must have a creator before that creator in a never-ending chain. In fact, the feudal notion of a never-ending chain of creators was one of the arguments used by Muslim theologians to explain the necessity of believing in God. It is self-evident that the creator must be self-subsistent and one, without like or equal. If any created being can be said to cause anything, that capacity to cause was itself created within that being. Thus, no being in the universe can be said to be self-existent. Rather, it owes its existence to the Creator, who alone is self-existent, as well as self-subsistent. It follows from the fact that the Creator alone truly creates that for each and every being. He has determined all possible causes and effects, all things whatsoever that come before or after it. Therefore, we speak of God as the sustainer who holds and gives life to his creation from first to last. All causes have their beginning in him, and all effects find their ending in him. In truth, created things are no more than so many ciphers or zeros which, no matter how many we put in a series, add up to nothing, unless a positive one is placed before the series to give it value. In just this way, the creation could have no real existence nor any value except by God. What we call causes have no direct or independent influence in existence, no direct or independent effects. It may be that we need to speak of causes and effects in order to understand how, in a short space and over a little period of time, some part of the creation is made intelligible to us and available to us for our use. But even this but confirms our dependence upon God and our answerability before Him. It is not God who needs causes and effects to create. Rather, it is we who need causes and effects to understand what He has created. He alone is the first and the last, the eternal, the initiator, and the determiner. And all our busy little efforts after cause and effect are but veils between ourselves and His Majesty. Let's then affirm once more, He, God, is one. God the self-subsistent, eternally besought of all. He neither begets nor was begotten, and nothing whatever is like unto him.